We're going to be beginning Lesson 4 this morning and appreciate everybody being here. I want to give just a general review of what we've covered so far in the class. Our Lesson 1, we talked about really the basis of why evil comes. We talked about God's providence. We talked about the nature of creation. And above all, we wanted you to know that God is not the source of evil. Lesson 2, we talked about choose to make God's thoughts your own. And we talked about how it's so important that we get out of what I call a pattern of failure. We can get into patterns in our life where we keep doing the same thing over and over again, and we have failure, and we just kind of double down on the same thing, and how, no, there's a way out of failure, that we need to be teachable, we need to understand some basic principles. And one of the things we talked about in Lesson 2, the big factor, is learn to accept the things you cannot change. Understand what God has given you and what are God's. And so many areas of where we just get so flustered and frustrated in life and overburdened is that we take on things we can't change. And the big one for me, I don't know about you, but it's changing a person against their will. And, you know, you can't do that. And so, but we're very stubborn in those areas. And so that's one that I've always had to look at, even in my work as an evangelist or some other area, is, you know, what can I make a difference in? What does God tell me to do? God doesn't overburden me. And that's been a real struggle. Then Lesson 3, we talked about do not flee from what is true. And we're trying to avoid a person getting in a situation where they create a false reality and they want to stay in that false reality. And what they do is they flee from reality, and they oftentimes end up going down what I call a big spiral. I was thinking of an old song by a song back in '72 called Going Down to the Bottom of the Hole. And it's got a really silly song, just repeated over and over again, going down to the bottom of the hole, going down. And I think they repeated it 10 times. And the thing, but you can end up in a situation where you have fear develop, you can get caught in what's called a blame game, but you end up taking an approach where you cut yourself off from the people who can help you, and you end up creating fear and tension, and you just see that spiral. And we talked about there's a way out of that, and how faith can be overcome fear. And we ended last week about don't get caught in the situation of blaming others. And when I talk about that as an excuse, you always want to know why something happens. We want to be in light, not in darkness. But you can really get in trouble when you start blaming others as a means of justifying yourself or running from reality. And that's very injurious. And you end up finding yourself cutting off relationships. And so you've heard me say this many, many times. One of the flags in your life of knowing that you may be going down a bad path is when you start seeing your relationships collapse, and you begin to see yourself becoming increasingly isolated. That's not good for you. Now, again, you may be a faithful Christian, and other people are unfaithful, and there may be at times where those things happen. I'm not saying in every case that you see relationships collapse that you're not doing right. But most of the time, I want to say, particularly being a Christian for years, and you start seeing collapsing relationships, take extra care to look at your heart and to look at the direction of your life and your thinking patterns, because you may well be going to the bottom of a hole. and there's a way out of it. There's a way out of it. And so, now, Lesson 4, we're going to talk about putting God in the center of your life. We're now, really, this is a lesson on getting out of self and having God become the center, about building a faith that will change you. If you're selfish, if self-centered, and naturally we would do that. Naturally we do that. And a self-centered person is going to behave and react in certain ways. But the blessing of faith in God, and only faith in God, can bring this. You can get out of yourself. Now realize, it's not like I make a decision, I'm going to get out of myself and tomorrow we do it. I mean, this is a battle. We got to really fight, because self wants to get back into control. So let's talk about this. You know, the essence of joy and purpose is God. The knowledge of God, knowing who God is. And in Ephesians 3:19, the Bible, you know, you look at this context about the prayer and the prayer for the growth of the Ephesians. But one of the things, if you want to find purpose, learn more about God. Think about God. Meditate on His ways. Ephesians 3:19, it says, to know the love of Christ, which passeth knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. The more you think of God and His ways and His character, it strengthens you. We did a whole quarter, and I'm actually right now in my evangelism and meetings, I'm almost exclusively doing a series on the nature of God. I have found that to be something that has really benefited me, to better knowing this and thinking about God rather than myself. Philippians 1:11, being filled with the fruits of righteousness which are by Christ Jesus to the glory and praise of God. I just want to say again, in your life, if you want to say, where do I start? If I've got a problem, where do I start? Make your life God-centered. Be a person of praise. When you wake up and pray to God, praise Him. When you see the creation, praise Him. Be the kind of person that is always placing yourself in the light of God and His knowledge. And you know, you start doing that, I'll tell you what, it'll make you a thankful person. It'll change your perspective. And so there's the essence of where we've got to start. Now, here's the problem. Let's talk about selfishness. Now, I'll tell you some of my weaknesses. I'm probably your weaknesses too. But you know, I'll never forget, I'm a wonderful mother. Wonderful, wonderful mother. Very good things. But my mother grew up in the Depression, so did my dad. But my mother had this fear of being cheated. Have you ever worried about somebody shortchanging you? Take advantage of you. That's a more sensitive area for me, and I've had to work on it. But my mother, I'll never forget it. I'm not saying she was doing wrong here. But we'd come home from the grocery store, and she would take that list, and she would go through every item. And she got short of the dime or a nickel, you know. That was a big deal. And, you know, wonderful lady. But, you know, we can do that in life, can't we? We can be afraid somebody's cheating us. Somebody's shortchanging us. And how do we react to that? If you're self-centered, then what are you likely to do? When you're cheated, how do you feel? You feel angry. Matter of fact, it can become all-encompassing. Suddenly, the whole world vanishes away. And, you know, again, I'm going to make some self-confessions here. I try to talk to myself a lot. You know, sometimes, I know this sounds silly, but it really does reflect selfishness. And Yvette can hear this and remind me of this when I do this while driving. But there's sometimes, you know, somebody kind of did this double lane change the other day right in front of me as I was driving to Birmingham. And I was kind of lecturing the guy. Now, he didn't hear me. You know, I was doing this about, do you have any eyes? Don't you think you ought to look before you do this? And, you know, and I was thinking all this. And I was all this upset, and I was thinking, man, that's become a really serious matter for me. I was almost ready for his physical hurt, not literally, but it's interesting. Have you seen it? Sometimes somebody goes one little thingy, and you kind of think you'd like to see their whole life destroyed. I mean, this is an extreme, but that's what happens when we really get into self. We're so sensitive. And it overwhelms, it blocks out other thoughts. Now, that may not be your weakness. I hope we'll talk about your weakness as we go through these things. But these are things that, see, what happens, and this is very true, when we focus on ourselves, we're going to become miserable people, won't we? You know how to be happy? Serving. And so this is something that as you begin to, you know, look at a strategy, Satan will preach to you in a thousand ways. Look out for number one. Now, let's say, you and I tell you what, I'm going to make this statement. That's a great statement. I'll recommend this to you. Look out for number one. Now, what does that mean? How does it mean in a bad way or a good way? Look out for number one. I'm not talking about Satan. I'm saying right now, look out for number one. What should that mean to a Christian?
We usually think of it as looking out for ourselves.
Now, and that's the wrong way, isn't it? But who's number one in our life? You see, that's why it could be said in the right way. But looking out for number one is looking out for God and letting Him be the center. That's the essence of my lesson. But if looking out for number one is me. So again, judge, jury, and executioner, focusing on your hurts. It is amazing to me. Sometimes in my life, and I'm still there, I'm not over this. Sometimes on something as silly as what a college team does, I can get upset and let it bother my life. And I'm thinking, come on, Larry. You know, my emotions sometimes don't cooperate with logic. But oftentimes we become upset because we're self-centered. And it's interesting. There's so many verses we could look at But there are people in their selfishness who fight God. The nations are mentioned here in Isaiah 27, 29 and verse 7. It says, the multitude of all the nations who fight against Ariel, even all who fight against her and her fortresses and distress her, shall be as a dream of a night vision. It shall be as when a hungry man dreams, and look, he eats, but he awakes, and his soul is still empty. Or when a thirsty man dreams, and look, he drinks, but he awakes, and indeed he is faint. And his soul still craves. So the multitude of all the nations shall be who fight against Mount Zion. You know, the ugly thing about selfishness, for all the pursuit we can give, it will not satisfy. You got vengeance on somebody you really want to have vengeance? How do you feel the next day? Great. Life is fulfilled. No. So, I'm telling you, your faith in God and building your faith in God, rejoicing in God, is really, really important. And now, how do you get there? Let's talk about this, and we're talking about selfishness in general. What would a selfish Christian need to have happen to turn it around? Now, think about that. What might be needed to get you to change your perspective? Now, it might be good teaching. And teaching, cut your heart, is ultimately what needs to happen, is good teaching. And let me show you, the fruit is what we want. Now get this. One of the best things that can happen to you is for you to be crushed and hurt. And when you mourn and you weep and you turn to God in this, James 4, 9 and 10, lament and mourn and weep, let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. I thought you were talking about healing a wounded spirit, Larry. You're saying a gloom and mourning and lamenting is good? Absolutely. When it turns you to God, now notice what happens. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord and He will lift you up. So let's step back for a minute, guys. This is really a good way to think. What do we need? If we're selfish, and again, we're not going to play God's role here necessarily, what do we need to turn us around?
You lose everything.
Yeah. Sometimes when bad things happen, seriously in your mind, I know this is going to sound really weird. Thank God for it. It's not that the bad thing is good, but the fact you're hurt and wounded and you turn in your heart to God and say, Lord, thank you for these humbling circumstances and let this draw me closer to you. Now that may sound as bizarre as could be, but I'm telling you, I really do think, I know in my own life, that's one thing, sometimes it's the time when I'm so frightened and hurt and uncertainty, is when I turn to the Lord and say, Lord, I'm thankful I have you. I'm thankful that I can now, I know one thing, I've got you. Isn't that good? Have you had those times where everything's going well and you don't think much about God and you're feeling good, but then when things are taken away and things crash and burn, and oftentimes the things that are happening is our fears. Sometimes we think the world has ended when nothing really has happened. But then we can turn to God and say, you can choose to do that. The next time you're hurting and you're panicking and you think the world is over, thank God for that and say, Lord, I'm coming to you. I'm going to become closer to you. I know I have you. So, yes.
You know, we read in Romans 1 about how the ungrateful people led where they were led and God gave them over to a debased mind. I mean, we consider where we are in this country. We have so much that we can easily become ungrateful for all the material wealth that we have and to really come to be very ungrateful for the basic necessities of life that we're called to be content with only. And sometimes we have to lose a lot of our material wealth. We look at the other countries in the world that don't have much. They're very dependent upon God. Or
you see a greater dependence. You see that affecting our culture.
They depend on God for their crops to grow. They realize there's more of a connection, whereas we can become so insulated by our wealth that we don't need Him anymore, at least we think we don't.
By the way, I was talking to Ryan Hasty last night, and he says, you know what I'm finding in evangelism? I'm finding that the Chinese or foreign students that have become Americanized aren't interested in the gospel. He says, but the international students that come in,
those are the ones that are open and teaching. We've seen some baptisms there. And it's interesting, it's kind of reflecting American culture here and some other things. Yes.
Jesus began the Sermon on the Mount with the words, "Blessed are the poor in spirit,
yes,
but theirs is the kingdom of God."
So that's what we're talking about here. I don't want bad things to happen to you. I don't want somebody to steal from you. I don't want somebody to murder your child or some other evil thing to happen. Evil is not good, but I'm telling you, take whatever event it is and let it turn yourself to God. Because if you pray for growth, what does the Bible say? If you pray for growth, you know what oftentimes you get? You get heartache and suffering. You get challenges. So view your challenges always, knowing you have a relationship with God. God can make you stronger spiritually in this. It's true of churches. It's true of individuals. It's true of families. Because adversity comes, it's not the end of the world, but how do you handle it? And adversity handled properly will boil self out of this world. All right. That was the introduction.
But I think it's a really good concept here. Now, let's now talk. Now, this is my big one here. If I had the lesson, you know, my personality, fear is one thing, and in the past, self-pity. You know, if you want to see the ultimate emotional reaction to selfishness, and it's sometimes, again, it's just a natural reaction, but let's talk about Saul. We've used this verse already. Here's a man miserable. He is the king. He has possessions. He has a godly son, but he's gotten himself in this envious, prideful way, and he thinks everybody's against him. 1 Samuel, here's the speech of a big-time pity party, a lifetime pity party. He says, "All of you have conspired against me, and there is no one who reveals to me that my son has made a covenant with the son of Jesse. And there is not one of you who is sorry for me or reveals to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as it is this day." Self-pity. I love this old children's song. "Nobody loves me, everybody hates me. I'm going out and eat worms." You start going down the road of self-pity. Have you ever preached your own funeral? About that. Won't people be sad when I'm gone? Yeah, I've had that. And then, you know, there's a little fun in self-pity. Yeah, they're going to be sad when old Larry's gone, and they're going to, oh, they've done these bad things. They're going to feel bad about it and all this. You know, some people struggle with that, then others don't. But that's one. There's still a bit of joy in this, but listen to this. Listen to these phrases. If you start hearing this in your mind, this is a big old red flag to wake you up. If you start reasoning like this, "People are talking about me." That's a real easy one, isn't it? It really is. People talking about me. You know, walk into a room and maybe people laugh. Oh, they're laughing about me. We can be very sensitive to think we know what we don't know. "Nobody understands my feelings. There is no one on earth who has suffered as me. Nobody cares. I don't deserve this." Watch out. Watch out. Because, again, something immediately happens. I understand where these thoughts come. I'm not saying the fact the thoughts come into your mind are bad. But if you let them become your dominant thinking, if you start dwelling on them, then you can go down the path of self-pity, and I will assure you, you'll go down a path of self-torment. And you can create your own reality. Saul created his own reality, didn't he? And that was a very bizarre reality. Let's talk about faithful men of God, okay? Again, I'm telling you, we all go through moments of self-pity. You're not an evil person when you start thinking you're the only one, okay? That is a natural reaction sometimes. Remember the account of Elijah? He faced the prophets of Baal. And he successfully defeated the prophets of Baal. But I want to tell you, I would have been hurt if I was Elijah. Because he stood on Mount Carmel, and there Israel gathered. Who would stand for the Lord? And you know what they did? They sat on their hands. They wouldn't say a word. And if I was thinking, the nation of God, and here are these people serving Baal, and I can't get one person to stand up and say, "I'm going to serve God."
you've ever preached, sometimes you oftentimes find that late in work congregation. There's sometimes preachers go through that time. But anyway, we all go through that. And so God has this great sign, and everybody goes, "Oh yeah, the Lord is God." They do that after the battle, you know. "Yeah, you're great, Elijah." And then the next thing that happens, Jezebel threatens Elijah's life. Elijah was exhausted. I'm sure physically exhausted from all day. And by the way, if you want to get emotional, get exhausted. Don't get enough sleep. Get too busy. You know, burn it both ends of the candle. You're going to be very vulnerable to emotions. And then when Jezebel threatened him, you know what happened to Elijah? He just broke and ran. He went into the wilderness. He just left everybody. And he started praying, "Lord, I'm ready to die." He not only wanted his own funeral. He says, "It's over. It's over."
Here's one. It's several times he says this to the Lord. If you look at the whole context, you see how the Lord kind of helped him. One of the first things the Lord had Elijah do, I'm reading some things into this, maybe not meant in the text. You know what the first thing the Lord does for Elijah? Gives him something to eat. Could I warn you that if you get in a situation where you're not getting enough rest, you're not getting enough food to eat, do you know that can affect your mind? And so sometimes something as simple as rest, I know that's a scary word to some people, you know, rest can help. But what we find here is Elijah's thinking in 1 Kings 19:9, he says, "And he went into a cave." Yeah, I know that had to be a happy place for him. He went into a cave. "And he went into a cave and spent the night in that place, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him. And he said to him, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?'" I love this question. It's a great question. It's like, what are you thinking, Larry? Exactly what do you think you're going to accomplish with this mindset? You know, I like this. He's trying to get him to think. He's trying to get reality to come back. Verse 10. "So he said, 'I've been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life.'" What's he doing? He's looking at himself and his own experience. What God does with him is basically he shows him his glory. If you look at this context, he shows him the glory. The first thing that Elijah needed to know, there is a God and he's powerful and he's in control. But then God says, "Elijah, let me tell you what, you're not the only one." And he goes on to say in verse 18, "Yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, and all whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him." Elijah, you're not the only one. Now, you know the next thing he does? I didn't put all the verses. You know the next thing God says to Elijah? Get to work. Get out of this cave, get out of this wilderness, and I want you to see this king, I want you to do this, I want you to point this person. He got Elijah back into the fight. Self-pity can pull you out of the fight. And it can put you in a position where you fall into a self-induced despair. 2 Timothy 1:12. "For this reason I also suffer these things. Nevertheless, I am not ashamed. For I know whom I have believed and persuaded that he is able to keep what I have committed to him against that day." Let me make something plain, though. Let me make something plain. There is a time for mourning. There is a time when hurts occur to take a step back and heal, okay? I'm not telling you the moment something bad happens, you jump right back into the fray. There is a place to be comforted. There is a place to go through a cycle of healing that where you develop. But there, eventually what you want to do is get back in the fight, and you want to be a thankful person. A God-centered person is always a thankful person. And they are not, their spirit is not collapsing, but they are trying to reach out and do more. So you don't want to go down the road of self-pity. Let me talk about a few things here that I think is interesting. Let's talk about what happens. Let me tell you, I'm going to let you do it before me give the class. What happens is, have you ever met somebody giving into self-pity? Have you ever met someone that really self-pity is characteristic of their lives?
I have. Tell me what happens. What are they like? Tell me a little bit. If somebody gives into a life of self-pity, what starts happening?
Feel what I saw in the Elijah story, and I may have missed the point, but he was so focused on the material of what Jezebel was going to do to him physically that God sent these signs to say, in the first one he saw a mighty wind and everything shook, and then he got an earthquake. God was not in either of those. He got fire. God was not in that. He was showing him all these material, physical things, that God is not in those things. And then he gives him a small, still voice. And he says, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he's changing his focus from the physical to the spiritual.
Yeah.
And when we allow the external environmental factors to drive our decisions and how we feel about ourselves, then we've lost that small, still voice. And I think that's kind of where you're leading, where we're going to in the next question is, you know, when do we know these things? Well, when we start elevating those things that are physical higher than those things that are spiritual, then we've given over to self-pity.
Excellent. Like we expand in the text, because that's really right. God's trying to get his mind back, like, you know. If we can get in it and we can stay in it. Now, here's the question I want to make. What about somebody who stays in it? Tell me about their lives.
I know one thing can be that they talk about themselves, and when you try to get them to see anyone else's perspective, they can't see other people's perspective. Right. Everything is how it relates to them, affects them.
They become ego-centered. And that you can't, you know, they cannot relate to other people. They really can't. And if you want to talk, you can talk about their problems. There's nothing wrong talking about problems, man. And I'm saying that what happens is that that's all you want to talk about. I've heard one person says that to hold on to your hurts like your last 2 cents doesn't make good sense. You say, you got to get out of that. It makes you miserable. Let me give you another one. Self-pity. Self-pity will mar relationships. Okay, go ahead.
Well, that's kind of what I was going to say, is that if there's somebody that's always focusing on themselves and the bad things, they tend to either withdraw from others or others withdraw from them, because it's exhausting to be around people like that.
I'll tell you a story about my best friend. He was really not a pity person unless, okay, I played golf with him. And I don't know why it happened. We're both competitive guys, but when we played golf, he would have a bad day and I'd have a good day. And finally, about midway through the round, he'd start throwing his clubs and he'd start complaining and he'd start fussing. And you know what I eventually did? I did play golf with him. And so, you know, thinking about this, I kind of, Emily was talking to me the other day, we were going to take a trip, and she says, you know, sometimes the driving with you is stressful. this just hit me. We talked about this yesterday, that, you know, I complain a lot to drivers. So I got something to work out here. She says, I like the trip except for the driving. Okay, all right. I'll put that in up here. Y'all get us a report for Emily the next time we take a trip, how I do. Y'all have to check up on me on this. But it really does happen. And again, there's a place. Now, I'll tell you, I'm good with people that want to talk about their hurts. And even sometimes, let me put it this way. Sometimes when you're dealing with depression issues, the person may have a pattern of that, but they're trying to fight it, okay? And I'm okay being a go-to person for somebody, for them to vent, and then as long as they're trying to battle it and get out of it, and we understand that. And sometimes you have to manage that. But you don't want that to be characteristic of your life, because it's the one attention getter that will eventually get you no attention. Preachers have jokes about this. You shake hands, people coming out of the chair. How you doing today? Oh, I'm good. How you doing today? Good. How you doing today? Oh, that's my house. This is hurting. That's bad. People rechecking me. Oh, good to hear that. No, that's a. We kind of know the person that loves to talk about their hurts. And again, I'm glad somebody wants to talk to me. But if that becomes your characteristic, people may, because they love you and they love God, they may give you some time, but they do it when they're rested and they're ready to take the ride, you know. So that's not what you want to be, okay? How do you feel when you live in self-pity? How did Elijah feel? He's a great man of faith. He's one of the great men of God. But great men of God can go down this path. How do you feel?
You're alone and the world is on your shoulders.
Yeah.
I love this. There's a series of questions. I've shortened them. But just ask some of these questions. Has self-pity ever changed what has happened? Has self-pity ever made you feel better for the long term? Has self-pity ever made you feel more loved? You know, has self-pity helped you to achieve and accomplish? Has self-pity brought you closer to others? Has self-pity brought you closer to God? Has self-pity allowed your wounded spirit to heal? Has self-pity helped you to understand others? What happens with self-pity is you get yourself in one of these repeated patterns of failures. When you get hurt and your wound starts healing, what occurs under your skin when you've gotten a cut or a bad scrape? What's the first process of healing when you have a scrape?
Scab.
You get a scab. And in order to let that scab heal, you need to wait 18 hours and then rip it off, right? That's what you're doing with self-pity. You keep going back over it and going back over it and not resolving anything, and you stay in a perpetual situation of hurt. Our bell's about to ring, and we're going to come back and talk about this next week as well. But here's the bit of advice I want to give you. How do you beat this? First thing to do is learn how to identify. And if you start hearing yourself going down this path, that you're the Elijah, and you keep remembering things, and you keep, nobody understands me, and you see a collapsing relationship, ask this question. Ask this question of yourself. Am I having a pity party? And sometimes I step out of myself and I'm going, I didn't even know I was doing this. Going for an hour or two. Ooh. And I'm like, wait, you're having a pity party. And there's something valuable to me when I can say I'm doing this. It's like if you know you've got a cold coming on, you can take a certain medication for it, can't you? If you've got a certain disease or a certain problem that there's a solution, but you've got to first recognize you're doing it. And a lot of people get caught up in it and they don't recognize what they're doing. And sometimes it takes time, yes.
You've got to refocus that energy. I mean, if you're people hurt you or people don't treat you the way you think you should or fairly or whatever,
yes,
you got to focus that energy somewhere else. Cut those people, eliminate those distractions in your life and focus your energy somewhere else.
Yeah, and the thing is, show them grace. Mm-hmm. Make them allowance. But you've got to get out of that pattern. It's really hard. It really is. We'll talk more about the how-to next time. That has helped me. If I can get to the point where I say, I'm doing this. That's the purpose of these studies, by the way. I've done these over the years, but I've really developed them more for this class. But I've learned in life that if you can give what people I call tools, where they can recognize patterns and then how to respond to it, that's the essence of counseling to a great extent. You know, you're trying to help people see the patterns and then tools. And if you can just consciously, okay, I'm doing this. And here's what I need to do. That is a great, great value. Other comments? We're going to have Second Bell ring here in a minute. Can you think of other Bible characters that fell in self-pity? May take you some time with that. I do think that we see evil people. Here's a brief time I didn't put, I think, Psalms 142, 3 and 4 up. But there was a time that David was in a cave. And he basically says, nobody cares. I look on my right and nobody's there. Look on my left, nobody's there. No, nobody cares. And David was in a cave and King Solomon's army were outside the cave. And I will tell you what, if I was there and they were trying to kill me, I probably would think worse than that. So, like I say, godly man can have moments of self-pity, but you don't want to live in it. Appreciate y'all's participation today.